Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Tearsheet Podcast, where we explore financial services together with an eye on technology, innovation, emerging models, and changing expectations. I'm Tearsheet Editor-in-Chief, Zach Miller. Today, we have an insightful conversation for you, featuring Trevor Nies, Senior Vice President and Global Head of Digital at Adyen, a leading financial technology platform renowned for its innovative contributions to the digital commerce landscape. This conversation was a fun one I recorded with Trevor as a LinkedIn Live session. With extensive experience and expertise, Trevor plays a pivotal role in driving Adyen's strategy initiatives, particularly in payment solutions and empowering businesses to thrive in the ever-evolving realm of modern commerce. At Adyen, Trevor leads efforts to develop solutions that address the complexities of digital transactions and provide businesses with the tools they need to navigate the intricacies of the modern marketplace. With a focus on enhancing payment experiences and streamlining operations, Adyen's digital commerce solutions are reshaping the way businesses engage with customers and drive sales in today's dynamic ecosystem. Join us as we delve into Adyen's strategic vision, exploring the company's commitment to innovation and its impact on shaping the future of commerce. And through this conversation, we aim to uncover the transformative power of Adyen's digital commerce solutions and gain insight into the evolving landscape of payments and consumer behavior. Before we dive into today's episode, I'd like to give a shout out to our sponsor, Strawberry Frog. Strawberry Frog has been hailed as the very best in creative marketing, innovations, and transformation for financial brands worldwide. Working with iconic names like Morgan Stanley, Truist, First Abu Dhabi Bank, and many others, they've set the standard for excellence. I've particularly enjoyed covering the firm's ability to enact movements within these organizations that infuse their brands with real purpose that employees and customers can get behind. So whether you're a financial giant or a tech disruptor, Strawberry Frog is your go-to for activating brand purpose and driving transformative moments. Learn more about their groundbreaking work at strawberryfrog.com. Without further ado, let's hop into our podcast today. Great. So welcome. I'm Tearsheet's Editor-in-Chief, Zach Miller. This is our Tearsheet Live version. It's basically taking what we've done for a decade behind closed doors and record publicly in front of you. I'm joined by Trevor Nies and from Adyen. I will introduce him. I'll let him introduce himself first. But you know, these opportunities enable you to interact with us and our guests. It takes it out of sort of the broadcast mode and allows people on LinkedIn to ask questions and interact with us. And so we'll be doing more of these in 2024 and hope you'll join us. Trevor, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, Zach. Thanks for having me.
So who are you and what do you do? That's a question we've asked for a decade. Tell us about yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah. So Trevor Nies, SVP, Global Head of Digital at Adyen. So I just came over from the merchant side over to Adyen last year and run a strategy for the company. Now, strategy is a big name here. So what does that mean? Well, it really means a couple things. One is determining what verticals do we go after for our large e-commerce businesses. And keep in mind, Adyen, we focus entirely on enterprise businesses. And so the household names that you or I know are probably customers of ours. And so what verticals do we go after? Is it online retail, digital content, or something else? What are our product priorities? And how do we manage thinking about processing locally, perhaps in India versus taking on a new payment type in the US? And then as part of all of that, driving the roadmap, but also what's the go-to-market strategy? How do we think about pricing and bundling? And how do we differentiate at the end of the day from our competitors? But ultimately, it's about the customer. How do we ensure that we provide the products that our customers need to help them innovate with their business models?
Awesome. I love that succinct introduction. I'm also curious personally, like having spent time on the merchant side, moving now into the strategy role, how has that impacted, I guess, how you look at the world?
Yeah, I mean, it's what's been really fun is that, you know, I have this merchant hat on me any given time, right? I mean, I spent a couple decades on the merchant side, participated in a lot of different industry forums. And for me, it's really about helping the merchants and their customers innovate and change the industry. And so what better place to go do that than come to a financial technology platform, a payment provider who has, you know, thousands of voices versus a single voice in this particular industry. And so, yeah, it's been fun for me consistently representing the merchant at heart in everything that we do.
Before we continue, I want to take a moment to reflect on the incredible work being done by our sponsor, Strawberry Frog. Strawberry Frog doesn't just talk the talk, they walk the walk when it comes to activating brand purposes effectively. Just look at their collaboration with SunTrust and the On Up movement they created. It's an excellent example of moving beyond lofty purpose statements to tangible, impactful action. But it is not just about external movements like On Up. Strawberry Frog also excels at internal culture shifts, as seen with brands like First Abu Dhabi Bank, SunTrust, Walmart, and Pandora. From theory to action, Strawberry Frog knows how to bridge the gap, ensuring that movements resonate authentically with both companies and their audiences. So if you're looking to make a real difference in your industry, consider partnering with Strawberry Frog. Visit strawberryfrog.com to learn more about how they're shaping the future of marketing and transformation. Now back to our show.
So I'm curious also if that flavor of perspective that you have, that you've honed over this part of your career, what does that enable you to do that maybe someone else who doesn't have that background would, or, and how does it maybe bias your view in some cases?
Yeah, I think it's been really helpful for just how we communicate with our customers. And, you know, the very simple example is you go to a quarterly business review, how do you present, you know, and how do you share what we're working on with that merchant lens, with that customer lens? Like, what do they want to see? How do they want to receive the information, the data, and what's important to them? And I think I'm really able to bring that level of thinking to not only on the day-to-day, but then also thinking about the strategy. And it's also been helpful and frankly fun, you know, like attending other forums and talking to these customers. You know, a lot of them are my friends, frankly, and past colleagues, and it's just a space that I'm so passionate about, trying to, you know, really partner and learn every day from all these amazing customers that we have to help better shape up the products and the industry for what we're trying to all achieve together, you know, as one ecosystem.
Right. It must position you and Adyen like on their side of the table a lot, given that experience, that network, and that gravitas that you're describing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think it's fun for me to really strike this perfect balance of, you know, obviously I'm part of Adyen. I think I'm already bleeding green, Adyen green at this point. Just love the company, love what we're doing. But at the same time, you know, I have one foot in the merchant side and one foot in the Adyen side, which is a great combination to help ensure that we do always do the right things for our customers.
So I wanted to dig into real-time payments, and maybe you can help to sort of give us a lay of the land about where we are in the US and from where you sit. And I know in some of our discussions pre-show, you know, you wanted to maybe benchmark that against what's happening in other countries. I think that would be an interesting perspective, kind of a higher level perspective to start.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's always been, it's been fascinating to me, I'm sure probably to you too, Zach. Like, I feel like the US is so progressive in so many areas in this world.
Not in finance.
Yeah, we're always behind, right? We're always behind. And I feel like we have no plans to fully catch up at any time in the near future. And yeah, look no further than, you know, real-time payments, for example. And we've been somewhat stuck in the credit card world for many, many decades now. And by all means, it works very, very well. Everybody has a credit card or a debit card. We've seen more progression certainly over the years to debit versus credit, but you know, we're all on this drug of miles and points, right, with these credit cards, and it's this vicious cycle where merchants spend a lot of money on interchange and scheme fees, but the consumer certainly gets some great benefits as a result of it, and how do you change that behavior can be a challenge. But yeah, when we think about where we are versus the rest of the world, I mean, look no further than, you know, India and Brazil, and look what they've been doing here just in the last 2 years. And I think my favorite story has got to be Pix in Brazil. And really what we learned there is that when a central bank and or, you know, government bodies really get behind a new payment method or a new payment ecosystem, it works. You get a lot of traction really fast. And with Pix, one of the big advantages it has is that there's, you know, hard requirements. Every banking app has to have the same logo in the same spot, the exact same experience. You know, they make it certainly easy for customers to take advantage of that particular system. And it's grown faster than probably any other payment method we've ever seen. And then if you take a look at India with UPI, mm-hmm. you know, somewhat of a similar story here where it's been pushed so hard by the government. And of course, India is one of the most challenging markets, frankly, in the world for international companies to process payments in because of the controls around, you can't really store a credit card in the country. There's authentication requirements that you have to do. It makes it tough. But you can also look in other markets as well, even Europe. Ideal has been around for how many years now in the Netherlands? And that itself is taken over, you know, the markets many years ago, and it has really no plans to let go of it. And I recall, you know, it must have been almost 8 to 10 years ago, my past life, you know, we turned on Ideal in the Netherlands and our revenue went up like 20% because customers just didn't have a credit card in that market. And so, you know, those are a few examples. The US, of course, we've had cards. We've made some really nice traction, I would say, in the last couple of years with, you know, the Apple Pays, the Google Pays, Cash App. So we've seen wallets now finally show up, even though they've been around in APAC for how many years now. And then we've also now, of course, seen buy now, pay laters. And we're starting to see the edges now of bank payment methods, very nascent, but it does have some promise.
Well, let's double click on the pay by bank model. I know it's in, on our end, in terms of the media, we're starting to pick up more on sort of a, as you said, a slow snowball maybe, but talk about where we are there.
Yeah, I think what's really fascinating here is if you think about what our merchants, our customers are really looking for in a payment type, like what's important to them? And there's really three things. One is around performance, and performance is a combination of reliability and latencies, but it's also around a customer attempts to use that payment type and it just works, right? It's not being blocked.
Smooth. Right?
Yeah, there's no friction. It just works. And so that's super important. And then there's cost. And certainly in the US, credit cards are more expensive in the US than anywhere else in the world. And so merchants are constantly looking for alternatives that makes sense for their demographics, for their scenarios, their use case scenarios. That's really super important for them. And the third thing is looking for payment types that can really create innovation opportunities for them, different experiences that perhaps they haven't seen before, right? And so when you consider the things, part of what Adyen is always trying to accomplish is we want to be ubiquitous. We want to be able to provide our customers with as many different payment options that make sense because we realize every customer, every business that we work with is very different. And you know how a digital content player is going to work with a subscription business, for example, can be very different than an online retail who might be selling, you know, clothes or electronics, you know, could be $1,000 a transaction to a platform that's selling B2B. And so having that variety is incredibly important. We think that pay by bank, very, very new, and we're very, very excited. We just announced last quarter a relationship with Plaid. And that's important because there's really a couple ways to do bank payment methods today. And of course, the classic example is ACH. But there's a lot of shortcomings with ACH. There's no real-time authorization. There's no guarantee of funds. You, in fact, have to wait a couple of days to see and hope that you get the funds, which means there's a lot of room for, you know, fraud in that particular case and insufficient funds. And so with the Plaid partnership that we've created, we're excited about that because it works really, really nicely to do an authentication that is frictionless. As frictionless as it can be, because basically all it does is require that customer to log into their bank, which most people know their banking credentials more so than they know their credit card number, actually. And there's a lot of different scenarios that are happening today that people are going through a similar experience. I know when I file my taxes online, it says, hey, Trevor, you can either add every single sell or buy that you've done on stock one by one, which some years could be quite painful, frankly. Or you just log in your Fidelity account and we'll import it for you. And I'm like, well, that's an amazing experience. Okay, how can I take advantage of that? And we do that now with Plaid. We can offer that type of easy authentication, but then still run ACH on the back end, which ACH is cheap. It is amazing for subscriptions because it's a pull payment method. You don't need the cardholder present every single time that you want to transact with them, right? And so we think that's a really nice step into leveraging bank pay methods and giving our customers another option.
It's a really good point. And it sounds like that, you know, the partnership there almost fills in the shortcomings that you were describing with. How does this move to real-time payments, how do you see it impacting both the customer experience as well as maybe the merchant experience? Like, how is that going to change as we see more of this in our lives?
Yeah, and if we stick with the U.S. for a moment, I mean, we were just talking about pay by bank, which still isn't real time, right? And so then you start taking a look at a couple of the newer payment methods that have come out. You have RTP, real-time payments, that the Clearing House basically put together. Boy, I think it's been almost 5 years now. Time is fast here. But and they're making some good traction now. I think about 350 banks now participate. It's a conglomerate of banks that put this together.
Still mostly receive, right? In that sense.
I was going to say traditionally.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to steal your thunder.
Oh, you're exactly right. That's where it's going with it. It has been really used for receiving for payouts. Now, with that said, in fact, I was at a conference a handful of months ago, and there was somebody on stage who does sports betting here in the U.S., and that's top of mind now since the Super Bowl just happened here. But what they mentioned is they're now using RTP for collecting payments in their scenario, which makes a lot of sense because for them, it's got to be real time because their customers want to put money in their account and they want to bet real time during the game, right? And so what better way to do that than with RTP that has authentication, that has real-time push? You don't really have chargebacks in that space. And so I think they're seeing some real nice benefits from it, but that's kind of the first scenario I think I've really seen where merchants are now taking advantage from a pay-in perspective, let alone payouts. And then you have, of course, FedNow, which has just recently launched here last year, but it's only today working for payouts, still no pay-in capability just yet. And so it's early days in the U.S. for these, but the real advantage is it's real time and you can fund, you know, potentially wallets or even on the payout perspective. I mean, think about like an Uber driver, or Lyft driver, whoever else, you know, what better way to finish your ride and you can theory get paid that second once that ride is done. So you can go buy gas and you can go, you know, buy your groceries. You don't have to wait to get paid, you know, once a week or every other week. So we see a lot of really interesting scenarios that this is going to create just amazing new customer experiences that we haven't really seen in the past, but it's early days still.
Yeah, I get that. And I think it was the founder of public.com, which is a competitor to Robinhood on the show. And he had said that pay-in was also important there. Like if, you know, for an investor who's or maybe a trader who's looking at a stock and wants to get in, being able to go from idea to trading really quickly was an important functionality for them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, that's just another example where it does make a lot of sense. I think what will be fascinating is we have quite a few customers too that sell, you know, an expensive piece of hardware or some initial upfront cost, and then they have a subscription that runs behind it. And the question is, what alternatives can perhaps be used for something like that? And that's where, boy, that first time payment, if you could do a real time payment, but then maybe leverage an ACH or some sort of recurring capability on the back end is the perfect answer for that. And if you take a look back to my favorite picks here, if you take a look at picks again, you know, they're looking to launch a recurring capability in October, the end of this calendar year. And so now picks could do just about every scenario you can imagine. From a merchant perspective, from a customer perspective, and it'll be great to see, you know, how long it takes us here in the States to be able to do a combination of real time plus recurring as well. And I don't think we see that in the radar anytime soon. Back to our first point, the U.S. is typically behind, but that will be an important area for us to invest in as time goes on.
And Trevor, how do you see cross-border real-time payments, given the fact that you're working with some of the largest merchants in the world? What are some of the challenges there? Is that happening in real time? I guess it depends on the destination market, but how does cross-border play into this move towards real-time payments? What are some of the opportunities there?
Yeah, and you hit it there. It does depend on the market, right? So, you know, for example, today at Adyen, we can do real-time cross-border to Europe. And a lot of that's because we do have a really nice advantage. We have our banking licenses in the US, the UK, and Europe that allows us to be connected, you know, directly with the central banks and allow that kind of real-time payout capability. But once you get outside, you know, the mainstream markets, it's hard. It's very challenging. There's very few capabilities that exist, frankly, in the industry today that can get you to a lot of these other countries that are important to get to. And you know, back to that Uber example, I mean, you know, there's a good percentage of drivers that, you know, want to send funds, you know, back home immediately to their family, to their friends. You can imagine there's marketplaces that exist where you know, online retail. Think about like some of the large Chinese merchants out there now that are really starting to dominate the US. Yeah. You know, when you think about Temu and Shein and some of these other big mm-hmm. companies, you know, they have marketplaces and, you know, they have several manufacturers, thousands, frankly, that are outside the US, outside of Europe, that are in Asia Pacific, and they're looking to get real-time payments as well as part of their marketplace for what they sell. And it's hard. It's hard today. And so that's another big opportunity, certainly that you know, Adyen's looking at, that the industry needs to look at, because these scenarios, you know, it's a global marketplace now. It's not just US, it's not just Europe. We need together find a way to make it easier to be able to fund customers around the world and let customers send funds around the world. And really, frankly, get the whole global economy to a more level playing field when it comes to, you know, financial capabilities.
Totally. And I guess double clicking on that, like what does Adyen do to onboard merchants into like a real time payment, like capabilities, particularly when you're dealing with merchants all over the world? Like how customizable are the solutions to be able to meet your clients' needs?
Yeah, and we've been, you know, as you can imagine, invested quite heavily. You know, certainly being both a financial technology platform and a bank means that, you know, as a bank, we have a lot of compliance requirements that we have to, of course, adhere to. So, you know, we invested a lot in the KYC, know your customer, and evaluation. We evaluate the risk of every company we take on, whether it's risk of solvency, whether it's risk of the products that they sell, whether it's, you know, how are they floating funds? I mean, there's a lot that goes behind it. Now, the good news is, being a financial technology platform, is we've been able to automate, you know, a vast majority of that. But you know, what really makes my job fun and everybody in the company's job fun is that I can tell you every week, every day, there's some customer that comes to us with an amazing new idea that they want to push the envelope on and try something new and think about something differently. And so we're constantly evaluating those scenarios. And one of the things, though, that we do at Adyen, I think really well, is we will be very, very hesitant on doing something, you know, drastically unique for one customer that nobody else benefits from, because like every tech company, our resources are limited. We want to find ways to enable, you know, a lot of our customers with a single feature, a single capability. And we want to be able to see long-term value to our customers with anything that we build. So while we'll certainly do some custom work, we're going to do with a lens on how can this help shape the industry differently or help our other customers too.
Awesome. I know we have time for one last question. We're getting near the end of our time together. Maybe we can look out into the future. You talked about, you know, the US and where we are vis-a-vis the rest of the world and sort of our timelines. Well, where do you see in general the future of financial payments heading, both in terms of like the technology and market adoption?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of things that we'll see just continuous improvement on, and that's just around friction. And I know it's so overused, but it's also one of my favorite examples too, right? But like the Uber example is just brilliant. It's
a great example because everybody can relate to it. It's like you know the magic of how it works from that experience.
It's exactly right. I mean, I can't tell you how many times now, occasionally I get in a taxi and I start walking out. I'm like, all right, thanks, see ya. And they're like, hey, you need to pay us. And I'm like, oh yeah, it's trained me as a user, right, to not even think about payments. And of course, you know, you think about Amazon and a couple other large retailers have done also a really nice job on continuing to remove friction. And so I think the global trend we're going to continue to see is that friction getting removed, where you don't even have to take out your wallet anymore. It's going to really boil down to a couple of things. One is it just happens behind the scenes, or biometrics are really going to continue to make a big difference. And then to give you an example on that, you think about in Europe, you got the Payment Services Directive, PSD2, and you got PSD3 coming out here shortly as well. That really made really created a lot of complexities for merchants and customers over the last handful of years, because the requirements to authenticate are a little clunky. It's actually it actually adds a ton of friction using 3DS, 3D Secure. And so the next stage on that, as an example, is biometrics authentication. So why not use facial recognition on your phone or your fingerprint on your Mac, whatever it might be, to initiate a payment? Again, not having to get out your card, your wallet, but also having security around that as well. And so I think one is certainly removing the friction for the purchase through both making sure that you don't have to be, you know, present, because we know where you are. We know, you know, you're in a car or you have your phone on you, et cetera. The other is the authentication. But I think the other one that we'll see more traction on is just data sharing between various parties. And what I mean by that is, if you think about how we solve fraud in the space, merchants have so much powerful data about a customer. Like, they know the IP location, they know the device, they know that they're trusted. Like, hey, Zach, I've seen you purchase from me every single month. I trust you. Mm-hmm. The issuer, on the other hand, doesn't have any of that information, but they do have, oh, but I know, you know, Zach was had dinner at this restaurant, and he's been a customer for 10 years or whatever it might be, and he's been at the same address. But neither one of them share their data today. And so how do we find a better ecosystem to help merchants and issuers share data to provide a low friction customer experience? And it feeds into my previous point, but how to ensure that you don't create these false positives and block customers when you shouldn't? How do you minimize the fraud? Because I can tell you, fraudsters are sharing data, but we're not, right? on this side of the house. And so I think those are two big trends that we'll start seeing that ultimately will create better experiences for the customer.
Trevor, it's been great speaking to you. I feel like, I feel positive actually. Like, I can also sense, you know, like your perspective and vision in terms of how long some of these things take to play out. But I actually feel like after this conversation that things are headed in the right direction, and you guys are absolutely leading the field. So thanks for joining us here on the Tearsheet podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Zach. Appreciate it.